And now let's go to this great new Irish novel. It's called Lazy City. It's about Belfast. It's a young author, Rachel Connolly, is from there, and she reflects in the novel on the lives of people in their 20s there now who are all a bit lost, and a lead character who's dealing with personal grief, basically one hangover at a time. Rachel Connolly is in Belfast. Good morning to you, Rachel.
Good morning. That's such a good description of my book. I'm going to like write that one down.
Oh, good. You're very welcome to it. And congratulations on it's an achievement, you know, because but let's find out a little bit about you, first of all. I know inside the back cover, it says you were born in 1993 and you had an unusual route towards writing, didn't you?
Yeah, so it's kind of a weird one with me. Like I did maths at uni and kind of worked in insurance for a bit and started freelance writing as a kind of essayist and journalist. And then sort of like made my way into writing that way.
So maths and insurance, and you're literally studying maths in Manchester University, is that right?
Yeah, I did maths and physics there, which is such a random one. Yeah. But it teaches you to sit by yourself in a room for a long time, like banging your head against a wall, which you need to do as a writer.
What did you find when you were in college in Manchester? You found a particular, I wouldn't say curiosity about Belfast, but the attitude towards Belfast was interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it was the first time I'd been to England, and I didn't know that what was going on in the north of Ireland was not something that everywhere else knew about. So like the whole everything, culture, history, whatever, everyone was like, what is this? It's probably different now because of Brexit, but there was just a huge sense of like cultural gap, definitely.
I think you've been generous saying that it changed after Brexit. I think they still haven't a clue what's going on anywhere on this island. So you found that, but you got a comradeship, didn't you, with people from other parts of the north?
Yeah, like I definitely found that. I made a lot of friends from Derry, kind of gravitated towards the Derry girlies, and obviously had English friends too, but you definitely have like a commonality with people who kind of understand that context and understand what kind of like family stuff like will be similar to yours and all of that stuff.
Is there a difference between the heads on people from Belfast and those from Derry?
Yeah, I mean, Derry people are very cheeky. I love Derry people. My mum's from Derry. My grandma lives in Derry. But they've got a great sense of humour up there and they're very camp. But good storytellers.
Compared to Belfast?
Yeah, I think better in Derry. I'll give them that.
This is a great love for Derry. There seems to be, very oddly, a big Derry population in Manchester University.
Yeah, I think there really is. I don't know why there is. Sometimes I think maybe just like a group of people go and then it becomes a place to go, if you know what I mean. Like once you know there's people there.
Yeah, it has that obviously historic Irish connections, but that is a curiosity I hadn't come across before. Mm. So how do you develop from studying mathematics to becoming a writer?
I did like a lot of student journalism when I was at Manchester, and I kind of wanted to be a writer, but I didn't really know how it worked, which is kind of the same for a lot of people, I guess.
Yeah, even when you're writing.
Exactly. I got a couple of journalism internships through this guy that I met at like a careers day. He kind of really hooked me up, and then I was taking holiday from jobs to do those, but I got a couple of bylines out of those, and then I used that for freelance stuff, and then it just kind of grew from there, basically.
You've done extremely well. I mean, tell us, you've written for all huge publications all around the world.
Yeah, I am. I write mostly for American places now, but yeah, I've kind of written for all over. I guess I kind of just got lucky with like a couple of my early pieces went viral, and then I kind of got a lot of work off that, and it's kind of just gone from there.
One of those pieces, presumably that profile on Blind Boy for the New York Times.
That's a recent piece. That was I really liked doing that. I like doing profiles maybe of like slightly less full-blown celebrities because they have such a big team of PR people around them. Yeah. So you're never really going to have like a super interesting conversation. But someone like Blind Boy is still actually kind of, despite being famous, like a kind of a normal person in a lot of ways.
Yeah, that's a fair way of putting it. And that was one of the things that went far. So New York Times, New York Magazine, The Guardian, it's going very well. Why did you decide right now is the time for a novel?
I was writing the novel for a little while, and I was kind of writing the novel in the morning before other work, and got a bit of time during COVID because I got some money on the furlough scheme. Had like a couple of months where I was like working on the novel more than I was doing a couple of pieces, but kind of money wise had more time to work on the novel, and it was just finished. So it was time to sell it.
Time to go. That's just basic writing. No wonder you studied mathematics. That's all I'd say. There's a great piece. I mean, it's a real homage to Belfast, or it's nearly like a guide to modern Belfast. I don't know which one is true.
Yeah, that's such a nice way to put it. It's Yeah, I guess because I wrote a lot of it during lockdown when I wasn't really able to go back to Belfast very much. So I think that you can definitely see a kind of like sense of wistfulness that I was regarding Belfast with at that time. And I love Belfast so much, and I think that really kind of like comes through in the novel quite a lot.
The lead character, she's called Erin, which seems nearly on the nose to describe where she stands on the national question. But of course, it's not clear where anyone stands on the national question, this one. Tell us about Erin.
Yeah, she's kind of had this personal loss, as she said, of a friend of hers died. So she's moved back from London to Belfast and kind of is trying to like make sense and regroup and kind of figure out what she wants her life to look like moving forward. So she picks up, she's like hanging out with her old friend Declan, and she picks up with this ex of hers, and then this kind of like new flame, and sort of like the those relationships kind of like pull the book forward as she's trying to sort of like eke her way back to normality.
The new flame is very, he's an American visitor who's come to, he's got an
Yeah, I
academic
love
job.
him.
Yeah, he's a great guy. But he also gives us this kind of foil to see Belfast with the outsider's eyes. Is that the idea?
Yeah, and I clocked as well after I clocked after I wrote it, but he's the only writer in the book, and he kind of comes off as a bit of a foolish character,
Explain
which is
why you
kind of
think he's
funny.
foolish, yeah.
I think he's one of these people who like talks a lot about doing stuff, but maybe is doing less than he's talking about doing the stuff, which is a characteristic I notice a lot in people. But I think it's interesting to me that he's the only writer in the book because he's sort of like gently made fun of. It wasn't intentional when I was doing it, but maybe a subconscious thing.
Is there also a thing that because he's an outsider, and this is more as relevant to people in the South as it is to Americans, let's face it,
Yeah,
who
totally.
go to Belfast, they hear everyone speaking the accent, but all they're really hearing is troubles, 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 troubles.
Yeah, that was something I kind of wanted to sort of like poke fun of in the joke too, because or in the novel, in the joke, in the novel too, because it is a place where there's a big trend at the minute for kind of troubles-based stuff. You know, there's that big book, Say Nothing, and that's sort of like a really buzzy topic at the minute, because I think we've now got enough distance from it that people feel almost entertained by it, which is something I'm very careful of not wanting to contribute to. But the sense of this being the way, the identity that the place has, and then nothing else, was definitely something that I kind of wanted to pull out with that character a lot. And you're right to point that out about the South too. There is that kind of sense of like distance, definitely, that I think, you know, even an English or American audience wouldn't realize that this was something that really happened in the north of Ireland. Yeah, definitely.
And that sense that nobody around Erin wants to talk about it, but it's really all that's there. It's kind of lingering.
Yeah, that's something that I've definitely observed a lot, which is that generation, they a lot of them did, you know, amazingly in terms of like trying to move on from that, trying to build something positive and build a future. But I think there is a bit of a tendency to just kind of like paper over memories, not really talk about stuff, or like someone will just bring something up one time, be like, remember when the British Army did this? And then you're like, oh, grandma, you've never mentioned that before. And she's like, oh, I have. And you're like, you haven't. So there's that thing of just, I don't know if when Good Friday happened, there was a way to talk about that stuff, and I'm not sure if there ever has been. So there is kind of this sort of slightly jerky, jaunty thing of it pops up sometimes, and then it's kind of papered over. And that was something that definitely I think you can see like bubbling along in the book.
It builds really well, particularly between Erin and the relationship with her mum, because her mum is obviously from the previous generation,
Totally.
and they have a totally severed relationship.
Yeah, and it's totally like it's their relationship is very symbolic in terms of the her mum was living in this time where life was so much harder and it was so much worse, and there was not opportunities, and there was not lots of things that people in our generation now do have. And I think that gulf is the real thing that sort of sits between them, and that is a real thing that is really hard to pass. I almost see it as sort of quite similar, not in the race sense, but to the sort of second gen immigrant experience, where parents moved on and did all of this great stuff to move forward, but the difference between your life and theirs is still actually huge.
Yeah. And I'm obviously living up to the stereotype of the Southerner looking at the North through those lights, because there's loads more interesting stuff about Belfast here, and particularly to do with materialism. And you're fascinated, aren't you, by people and their worldly possessions?
That's such a good read of the book. Yeah, a lot of that stuff's like characterization in my novel, because I and this is like a kind of geeky writer thing, but I don't believe in you meet a character and then you just get the slab of backstory. I just really don't believe in it. I kind of think it's more interesting to like list details about the person throughout the text, and then the reader can kind of pick the stuff that is interesting to them. So yeah, a lot of that stuff is characterization, like the way that people interact with their belongings, like if they're messy or not, do they look after themselves? Like that's definitely like a huge characterization thing for me, because I think that's a big thing that we use to like pick up information about people in the real world.
Yeah, I just noticed that. I'd even forgotten that. Only in hindsight can I see Erin constantly referencing how someone looks and how they're showing up and assuming what's going on in their life. And she kind of mentally sees them leaving their apartments and so on. But what I found curious is the reference to the post-conflict era in Belfast, and the fact that the shops they end up with are slightly crap versions of whatever of the same shops everywhere else. Something like that. I think the line.
I remember when Hollister came to Belfast, I must have been 14 maybe, and it was like, I mean, it's a naff shop, but everyone was like queuing around the block to like to go to Hollister, because it was in like the OC and stuff. It was like it was like California, it was America, like it was like this golden land that it promised, where it's a shop that sells like joggers.
That's not really exclusive to Belfast. That's kind of like half the cities in Ireland. And the fact that they're kind of ersatz New York penthouses, but they look out onto the Ormore Road.
Yeah, I think that's something that I'm really interested in, is in a general sense, it's like how development makes everywhere sort of look the same. And that's kind of a theme in my nonfiction too. But in Belfast, it's kind of interesting because it was really run down when I was like 18, and now it's quickly got all this new stuff. So it's like it's got this patch of rundownness with like a big skyscraper in the middle of it with this and that and the other. And that sort of thing that's gradually happened in other cities happening very suddenly is something that I'm really interested in aesthetically. I mean, I think it's dire, but I'm interested in it.
It is a curious case study, isn't it, in Belfast, because you do have these shooting towers right next to, very odd. Next to, pretty much next to poverty or neglect, isn't there? There are still sites with just nothing there.
Yeah, and it'll be like the highest bar in Belfast, but then the next one's half the height. So it's like, what are you looking at?
That's the Grand Central of Belfast. What are you curious about? What are you sort of looking, what's your view of that?
Of what that means? I mean, I guess like a thing that has happened is that there's a bit of money in Belfast now. And I wonder if some of this stuff is a way to perform status in a way that kind of feels legitimate to people. I wonder if it's that. It feels like that to me, but I'm not sure if that's the answer.
Kind of identifying yourself through materialism or things like that.
Yeah, or sort of saying like, well, we're just like everybody else, you know, it's a proper place, it's the proper developed world. But I think the best thing about Belfast is that it's not like everywhere else.
Yeah, exactly. I totally agree with you. Erin, she doesn't look after herself. There's loads of hangovers across the whole book. I nearly had to have paracetamol myself just reading the book.
Yeah, I actually that was another thing. I did not clock until after I was doing it. But her life is very much drinking and hangovers and stuff. But in a way, it's kind of hopeful to me, because I think that's her getting out and socializing again and trying to like join the real world. And I think there's one of the chapters where that's kind of like spelt out more literally, where it's kind of the closest thing she's had to a normal night since she has had this loss. And that to me is actually very hopeful, despite the fact of it being headachy and making you want paracetamol.
They're very casual, the characters, about drug use in the novel in particular. That really stood out.
Yes. Again, something that I noticed more when other people pointed it out. But I think that's kind of part of life for young people now. Yeah, I really do think it is, and I think it's the kind of bender and sesh culture is such a big part of life now, and such a big part of how people connect and relate to each other. Which maybe says something about alienation, and you know, people can only be vulnerable in those spaces. Yeah. But yeah, it's definitely a huge part of life at the minute.
It sounds horrendous way to be going. But for the likes of us, it's kind of like a glimpse into the secret lives of 20-somethings, particularly the kind of casual social acceptance among the whole group that they're banding together to buy cocaine and ketamine, whatever they can get their hands on, to prolong the night.
Yeah, in the book, it's like a real bonding ritual, and I think that is definitely, because I think as well part of it with young people, and this sounds really cheesy to say, but you have to work so much now, like, you know, you don't have secure employment, like loads of people are like in these kind of crap zero-hours jobs, and your life is so oriented around work, and I think doing anything that is not oriented with like productivity or work or whatever, which like a big bender in a sesh is not at all. I think that almost feels like actually kind of rebellious in a way, and actually almost like reclaiming some of your life and some of your agency.
Or that's how it's been seen, I suppose. And by the way, the crap jobs sector is given a really good going over in this, in a very funny way, but there is a serious point to all of this sort of wit in the novel.
Yeah, it like, I mean, I'm really glad you got that about the tone, because the style of the book is quite, I mean, you read it, you know, but the style of the book is kind of new in that sense, in terms of like it's like that kind of mixing of tones where it's sort of like a little bit jarring of colour, where it's humorous, but it's always sort of serious underlying it. But I think that's a thing like constantly now, where you're doing so many jobs have this like hugely bureaucratic kind of nonsense element, where you're, I mean, I remember a job I was doing where my manager was like, oh, can you do this, can you write all of these down on a like rows of information down on a table, and I was like, oh, I'll just do it on the computer, it'll be quicker. And he was like, oh no, just do it by hand. And I was like, why? And then I was like, you literally are just wasting my time. Like, you just want me to spend 4 hours doing this because you have nothing else for me to do.
Nothing else to do.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing of so much work now, is that it's just like, it's just a bit crap and it's kind of low quality, and like you can tell like while you're doing it that it's purposeless and that your time is being wasted. And that was something that I kind of wanted to like not explicitly do in the book, but just make, I wanted to make you feel like that rather than saying this is boring. I wanted to make you feel like, oh my God, this is boring.
Well, it's certainly not boring. It is a great achievement, and congratulations, Rachel Connolly.
Thanks so much.
And I hope you haven't portrayed it too grim. The drug taking is here and there, but it's not, it's depressing maybe as we're portraying it, because there's a hopelessness there, and there's comedy in that sort of hopelessness in many ways, isn't there?
Yeah, and there's a kind of there is a kind of real heart to the book, I think, which I think sometimes when you hear that something's drugs and whatever, you think it's going to be really edgy, and it is in some ways, but it's definitely not a cold book. It's sort of like a warm book, which I think, but yeah, no, thank you so much for having me, and thanks for your very smart read of the book.
Thanks a million, Rachel. Lazy City, it's out now. Canongate Books is the publisher. 51551, that's our text.